Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndySgirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jill Zarin and your life and mine. The only thing that I want stolen is my heart.
An apple a day keeps the doctor away. And a carrot a day gets you voted out first on Celebrity Big Brother because you're a fucking loser.
I was like, what? That was so chaotic. That was so chaotic. I can't. I am so into this already. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. Guess what? A special guest we'll introduce in a second because people won't know who you are by your voice, even though you co-created the podcast. It's a special special episode. It's Galentine's Day today. So happy Galentine's Day, writer, producer, co-host of the podcast. You might know her from, and of course, OG of the AG, Damian Bellino. Welcome to Andy's Girls.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. What a time to be alive. What a time to see Teddy Mellencamp. I was so disappointed to see she was going to be on Celebrity Big Brother after all of the rumors that it was going to be NeNe or it was going to be Erica Jane or Lisa Rinna. And then it was Teddy. And I was like, oh. And then she got voted out first. And I said, well, you know what? It was actually worth watching this episode to watch another room of people be like, no.
And she said, apparently, I don't know this because she has me blocked on Instagram since I asked her about carrots. I was like, if it's for a special event, can I have a third of one? And then she immediately blocked me, as did All In. I went all out, apparently. I have so many questions about this. So did you watch the entirety of, or was it just literally one episode and she was voted off?
I have been watching it regularly. I've never watched a full season, but I'm invested, apparently. I think she was on maybe, I don't know, because they like filmed maybe for a week. So she was maybe on for two episodes, I think. It was like an hour long episode where they all moved in. And then like the next episode, I think she got voted out. It was awesome. It was so quick.
And you know what? Here's the thing. I don't watch Big Brother, but I fucking die for Survivor. Survivor, you know this. On Survivor, you can be the biggest threat and get voted off first. Like that is a literal thing. If you are a big threat, they want to cull you from the group first, even if you don't, you know, you're like huge and could win at physical comp. They do not give a shit. They want you gone. I don't know anything about Big Brother, but my thinking is that she wasn't necessarily eliminated because she was the biggest threat, even though that's what she's telling all the like press outlets.
Wait, no. Is that what she's really saying?
100%. I saw a video of her.
I think that it's, you know, and I don't know. I don't know Big Brother well enough to really speak to it. Like I know Survivor, but I think it's similar. It's like, it's strategy. There are also challenges, but it's also a social game. I think that like she was probably just a victim of people not really like knowing anybody yet. And also some people knew people. So like she was maybe, I think, aligned with like in a quick alliance with like Todrick Hall, Carson Kressley, and Cynthia Bailey, and maybe another person. But there was another alliance that had more people, and like Todrick was like flip-flopping, and so was Shayna Mokler, who, do you know who that is?
She's from Rhode Island. She's a Rhode Island native.
Oh, okay, yeah. She was married to Travis Barker, and then she was on Hollywood Exes. That's how I know her. But she like flip-flopped on Teddy, and I was into it because she said her. And Teddy was like, I'm really sad that Shayna voted me out. And I was like, I'm so glad Shayna voted you out because you're off the show. I don't know. Like, it's so interesting. I don't have this reaction to like any other housewife. She might be like, you know how Danielle Staub like is like your absolute
trigger.
Like,
my trigger.
Yeah, she's like
my
a trigger. I feel like that's for Teddy. Like something about her, it's like somehow she like puts on this front of something that I'm like, it's so insincere. She acts like she's above it. Like, she doesn't want to be, like, known for being John Mellencamp's daughter, and she's not, like, doesn't want to be an actress. And it's like, you literally want to be an actress and are famous because you're John Mellencamp's daughter. I don't know. I can't stand her. We don't have to talk about her at all.
No, I don't mean to, like, insult the person I'm just going to reference, which tells you something about this comparison. But, like, she gives off big Meghan McCain energy of, like, you should – except Meghan McCain, like – had a career before going on The View, but there's something, there's almost like a shade of brattiness of like, there's like a, I hate to use this against or in describing women because it's so gendered, but like a whininess or something that's present of like, I don't deserve to ever feel uncomfortable. And it drives me a little bit insane. Like the Teddy, she's constantly, it's like an odd, there's something there where she's like a deer in headlights, except most people like deer. You know, like something is going on there.
I get that, but I feel like in terms of like a Meghan McCain, at least she has a point of view. I don't have to like it. I find what point. I find what point. What I find most frustrating about Teddy and what I found frustrating about her on Housewives is that it was very clear all of a sudden, or quickly rather, that she just wanted to be aligned with people that she thought were cool and pretty. And so therefore,
oh God.
That's what I like. You know what I mean? Like she wanted
I'm
to be
sure
with the,
you're right.
She wanted
I'm
to be with
sure
the cool
you're
girls.
Right.
And I yeah. think lots of Housewives join. I don't think all. I think lots join and want to be aligned with the people that they see as high status on the show. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you join Beverly Hills, it's like Crystal, I think, also was victim of that at times, but had a point of view. She was not afraid to have conflict with Sutton. She was not afraid to, like, rock the boat and speak her mind. And I feel like that is what Teddy never did. Teddy never broke out of, like, once she got aligned, and then she, I guess she broke out of, like, Lisa Vanderpump, but, like, they also weren't friends. She was just, again, trying to align herself with the high. She was just, ugh. Which is why... And go on this journey with me where this, like, really, like, hard left turn. It's like, I know that some people find Noella really exhausting. And I don't, and I do not disagree that she's exhausting, because I realize that she's, like, doing the most. Like, she made Mexico, like, annoying the minute she came into town. Mm-hmm. But she's not trying hard to align herself with the high status housewife. Like, I think she came on and I don't, to me, it's not like when, you know, like when someone joins and... like Teresa or Nene would think that that woman was coming for them because they were Queen Bee. I don't feel like Noella like joined OC and was like, I'm gunning for Heather Dubrow. I just feel like she joined and she was like, I'm going to like make a splash and I'm not going to go with the flow. And I think to me, even if I think it's annoying, I am appreciative of it for television because she's making choices that are not... like, it's not fun to watch everyone get along, and it's also not fun to watch one person dictate the story, which is what happens so many times when someone joins and they just defer to the Kyle or the Lisa Vanderpump or the Nene or the Teresa. It's not super fun to be like, oh, okay, Heather Dubrow is just like, she's back, and everyone loves her, and Shannon's like a sad sap. It's like, Noella's like, yeah, I think you're fake, Heather, and Shannon, you're a queen goddess. Your daughters are your soulmates, and I'm like... what's happening? I'm into it.
Are you liking Orange County?
Are you enjoying it?
You have a glow right now. You have a little bit of a glow.
I think the last time I was here, we talked about this. And I think OC and Miami are enjoyable because it's like there's stakes and it's fun and there's drama. But also it doesn't feel like this person has scammed people or this person mm-hmm. is like hiding assets or this person's running a cult. Like it feels like there are stakes, but it's like, Noella ordered an LGBT game for a teenager, and then Heather's like, this was pornography. And it's like, Heather's is being hyperbolic, and but also is correct, and basically. But also Noella is also, like, the stakes are real, but it's stupid, you know? And I'm appreciative of that.
Can I ask what your thoughts were on Noella saying that Heather was using straight privilege at that dinner?
I think she was grasping at any sort of defense that she had. Mm-hmm. And I think when she, the way she sort of was like, she was slurring and she was like, don't use your straight privilege. I'm a bisexual, biracial. And I was like, I don't know where you're going with this. Like, I'm on your side, essentially. Like, for TV's sake, I'm on your side. I want to support mm-hmm. you. But also, like, the argument doesn't have any... And I was into Heather's response because she was, I think, moved. And I know Heather's a good actress, but she was moved. And she was like, do not say that. I have gay kids, and right. I am not using my straight privilege. And I felt like she was being authentic.
Absolutely agree on the authenticity point. And I did find it kind of interesting. Like, I personally thought the use of the word pornography was, like... I thought maybe if you had said like sexually explicit instead of pornography,
which
would have been more appropriate. But I did get a kick out of the fact that Noella was like gunning hard, very defensive, which I actually understand if you take into account she just thought it was like a word. I've never played Words with Friends or whatever it's called, but like she just thought it was like a chill game, whatever, yada, yada. And then the second that Heather started reading examples of the cards, yes! She was like, oh, my God, that's so inappropriate. I'm so sorry. And honestly, like, to go that quick and realize that you had made an error, I know that sounds incredibly simplistic, but it's actually not in the world of Housewives. I appreciated that Noella was like, wow, I wish I had kind of known that. I fucked up. Like, I appreciated that moment.
But it took like the argument about like straight privilege came after mm-hmm. that part though, right?
Right,
like,
right.
It was like she brought it back to the like straight privilege and I'm bisexual after that she had basically said like, oh my God, I'm mortified. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And then it was like she doubled down. It felt like on her argument. And that's when I was like, okay, you're losing me a little bit. Like you're trying to continue the argument rather than just being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I certainly didn't mean it like that. But you know, again, I am grateful for Noella's presence this season because if she wasn't in the equation, I think we would have, I don't know, I guess we would have a much different season because I bet Shannon would be much more in the hot seat probably still. Like, I feel like Shannon and Heather will probably still be, I don't know, butting heads because Dr. Jen isn't doing anything. And I love Gina. I love Gina and Emily, but I feel like they are kind of good time Charlies this season. I feel like they're always kind of good time Charlies.
Mm-hmm. Which we need. I mean,
yeah,
we,
you need all
we
kinds.
We need. Yeah. You know, I do have to ask, what do you think the future holds for Noella? Is she Bronwyning herself into a little bit of a corner, like a little bit of an island by herself? Or how do you think this is going to work for her, you know, for the reunion and beyond?
I think that she's probably going to have an interest. I think it's interesting because I think sometimes people come on their second season and decide to be very performative. So I think it'll be interesting, like what kind of feedback she gets from producers and the team when she comes back for another season. I don't think she'll be fired because I think like love to hate her or love her on the show. She's made herself a presence. And I also think that we haven't like, we've only like really got the tip of the iceberg with her divorce because new stuff is kind of coming out, but hasn't even come out. We have yet to meet her children. She's also, my understanding is that she, like her father, I think is dead, but he was like a black newscaster in California, I think California. So like, I just feel like there's a lot more to her story that we haven't even seen or talked about yet that makes her interesting. Like, you haven't seen her as a mom. We haven't talked, like she hasn't got to talk about her parents really. So I feel like there's other stuff to come out about her that makes her interesting and different in OC. Also like, yeah, so I don't think she'll be one and done. I don't know that she has, like, the longevity forever because I think that whenever you're, like, such a performative housewife, there's always the risk that you're, like, you know, people get exhausted after a while, you know?
I mean, it's going to be kind of interesting to see how this reunion goes, and certainly next season. When it comes to the parenting aspect, though, because her divorce is like acrimonious isn't a big enough word, strong enough word to use, it would appear to me that there's literally no way those kids will ever be on Housewives. Her husband will not allow it. Like there's no, it's going to be a Brandy Bethany situation, I assume. He's not going to be like, keep doing this thing, even though I'm saying in the press that you're like slandering me on national television, but let the kids appear.
I haven't been following the divorce probably enough, like, off the show, so I guess I don't really know to speak to that. I guess I always just think like if Brooklyn can now be shown on Atlanta and Mark Daly like came around, then hopefully. But yeah, but I mean, this is also a lawyer who is in an, you know, so I'm sure he knows how to be as, you know, litigious as I don't know what I'm trying to say, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a wait and see, but I do have to say that I'm highly enjoying Orange County for what it is. It does to me feel like a breath of fresh air, like no problems, entertaining. I don't feel bad after. I don't feel bad because of the cast involved. I'm really enjoying Gene and Emily. I'm here for the ride. I'm excited to be watching Orange County again, let alone enjoying it. You know, it feels somewhat like a miracle.
Totally.
Can I ask you a question? Sort of unrelated to all of this, and then I really do need to deep dive with you about New Jersey, the show that's on my mind. But you know, there's been a conversation around online about New York, and a lot of people feel hopeless about the future of New York. And I, for whatever reason, late last night was thinking about how I would rank my favorite franchises, and New York was usually like right at the top, number one, or like Potomac, right around there. But I think within the realm of the classics, I would put New York as my number one. And I think about what Orange County has done this year, but really doing a turnaround, a refresh. I think it's working out really well. What do you envision happening with New York, number one? And number two, taking into account how gross last season was, where does New York rank for you as far as, you know, overall franchises?
I think New York ranks high for me. I would probably, like, of all time, like, are we just talking sort of, like, of the classic before, like, sort of pre-Potomac, Dallas, Salt Lake City, Miami times?
I mean, in the sense that, like, it's unlikely that Dallas would ever be considered in anybody's top. And, like, honestly, sort of similar with Miami from the perspective of, like, holistically the franchise, not season specific.
I mean, for me, Atlanta and Potomac are probably my top two, but that isn't always, because Atlanta's been uneven, I would say, since, mm-hmm. I don't know, since basically since Phaedra left, for better mm-hmm. or worse. Like, I don't mean that in, like, she is the reason, just, like, the show has been uneven. Right. And Beverly Hills and New York. Like, those are my top four, and I would say that they fluctuate. Like, they sort of, like, are a carousel of what, like, sometimes I watch Beverly Hills and I'm like, this is so bad, but I'm, like, addicted to, like, being mad at Lisa Rinna basically for mm-hmm. one, like, for three seasons, for 3 months of a year. I'm like, fire her. And then the next season I'm like, I love her. So, like, there's like I don't have those passionate of feelings about like New Jersey or OC. Like, I can get, like, I'm invested, but I don't feel like the way, like, where I'm like mad about Lisa Rinna a lot. So I don't know, like, mm-hmm. maybe Beverly Hills even ranks higher than New York. I was not like a super Housewives fan in those early seasons. Like, I was a casual watcher, so sometimes I think I should go back and do a rewatch, because maybe it would make me appreciate it as, like, a whole more, because I hate Ramona so much, and I'm, like, sad with some of the other ladies' stories that have come mm-hmm. in, that have, like, feel like they've exhausted themselves. So I don't know if that answers your question where it ranks high. I would say in my top four, but I'm not sure necessarily placement there. What I think needs to happen, I don't know. I've thought about this a lot, and everyone, so I would love for you to send me the stories you've been reading on Instagram or on blogs or whatever the streets are saying, because I always am like, I'm like really invested in casting news, and I always like to read about, like, who's rumored to be filming or who they're looking at. I think what OC did successfully was, like, they had some newbies, and by that I mean Gina and Emily, who they kept because they were working well enough, and they operated a place that, like, existed. And then they kept one, like, you know, as you would say, like, a spiritual OG. Like, they kept Shannon, who had tenure and had history with someone they were bringing back. And then they brought in some new people. The problem with New York is that they've, like, never done, like, OC is sort of famous for having had so many housewives. Like, they've had so many women over the course of those seasons. Like, they, like, and New York has had so many long running OGs, because it's like, Ramona's been on forever. Luann was demoted one season, but has been on it for every season. And then Sonia's been on since, what, like, season three? So mm-hmm. they've been on for so long that the idea of only keeping one of them feels weird to me. Unless, okay, and I'm working this out as I'm thinking about it. If they're following the model of OC, they could keep Luann, or maybe keep Luann as a friend, or keep Sonia as a friend. Fire Ramona and fire the other one of those three. And then they could bring back, like, Jill or Jill and Dorinda. And that would be, like, the people that the viewers know. And then they can decide whether they're going to keep Leah and or Ebony together, one, both, neither, and then bring in new people to, like, fill in that. To me, that's a version. I would watch Jill returning to New York with Dorinda and Luann in a heartbeat, with Leah and Ebony and, like, a couple other new people, or Dorinda and Jill and Sonia and then, like, Tinsley and, I don't know, new people. You know, like, I'm interested in new people. Bring in Jules, who was, and Dorinda, and then, like, Jules is a way to get more younger women in. Like, I feel like they need a bridge to bring in younger people, which is what Gina and Emily provide on OC, because they're, like, you know, 10, 15, 20 years younger than, I don't know age, but they're younger than mm-hmm. Shannon. I feel like that's the problem with New York. It's like Leah and Ebony don't feel like they're friends with those women. And they started to feel like it wasn't fun, because it was like watching people, like, meet on camera and then have to have, like, real conversations. And then it was like we lost all the fun, but also the real conversations weren't earned because none of these people had history. And, like, to me, Ramona is exhausting, and Sonia's storyline, I think, has run its course, even though I find her to be great comic relief. I just think that It's not fun. It's sad. I feel like she shouldn't be. I feel like she seems like she lives a better life when she's actually not filming. So anyway, so that's, to me, it would be like a version where we lose some people, bring some people back, and then get a bunch of fresh faces. Like, I just think that the show also needs, whether they bring Ebony back or bring Ebony and Bershawn back or bring just Bershawn back or just Ebony back or bring all new women of color back in, like, they also need to, like, not put a lone person of color in a cast that is known for being problematic. Like, either fire those fucking people or take them to task and don't let one person have to Tiffany Moon themselves. It's, like, not a fair position. And I think that they've learned that lesson, I think, based on what happened on New York and Dallas. I feel like they're trying better, I think. I don't know. Although, I don't know, Noelle is the only person of color on OC, so maybe not.
It is. It's one of those things where it's like, I've heard stuff, but then I feel like the sources, even though it's like separate people, I have a fairly good idea of who the original source is. And I cannot make heads or tails of both what I want to happen and also what I think is going to happen. I've heard so many different things.
Spill
from people.
It.
No, I obviously offline, but do you like that I was just gutturally? No, I cannot. But I just don't know what to say about it. I don't believe anything, number one, because often it's like a power play, just even in the idea of like
also
having,
like, I
information.
I could write anything
and throw it on Reddit and call it
a day.
I
could write an email to Dumois that was like, poop@gmail.com says Ramon is the only returning housewife and they're bringing back Cindy Barshop. Like, and then it would get posted and people would either take it and believe it or not, you know? But like, that's where I feel like I read those rumors. And even though I also take them with a grain of salt, I also am like, I read all of those things that were like, there was a thing that said Dorinda and Jill were like in talks. And I was like, I believe that a conversation maybe happened, but it's like seeing if Jill's interested does not mean that she's signing a contract. Cause like, you know, or like asking Tinsley if she'd come back. And her saying yes, and then them saying, like, actually, it doesn't make sense with the other people. That happens, but it doesn't mean that anything's really moving. You know, it just means that literally a PA was told to, like, check all the former housewives and see if who would come back of all of them. So Kelly Kalore and Ben Simone, like, literally could have maybe gotten a phone call, and that doesn't mean anyone wants her to come back. It just means, like, they're like, who can we get come back? Who would be interested? I'm sure they didn't call Cindy.
And you know that Jill... You know that Jill moved into Ramona's apartment, right? Her apartment building, not literal apartment.
I listened to some podcast where that, or maybe read an article where someone said that she now is living in, I thought it was Luann's, but okay. She's living in somebody's building. So she's living in Ramona's current.
I think it's Ramona's on the Upper E.
Yeah. Fascinating. I'm interested to see how they're going to handle Ramona. It just feels like maybe they're trying to hope enough time passes they can keep her on.
Mm-hmm. I could totally, that's 100% what's happening.
It just is like, I just think it's such a bad look, but I also just feel like they don't want to just only do fan, like, you know what I think? They don't want to let fans think that they dictate everything. And they also know that, like, to my point earlier about Noella, like, you need people on that sometimes people hate because they, like, push story. And also because you need people that won't just say, like, okay, Dorinda's back and we love her and she got the biggest paycheck and she's number one. But that does, like, Ramona is not going to just do what Dorinda wants. And we need somebody like that because Leah and Ebony might be like, okay, Dorinda's back and she's cool. And we know that she's number one. Let's play ball with her. Where Ramona's going to be like, this is fucking bullshit. I'm the OG. Fuck this. And like you need that. So I understand from a production angle. It's just like, she's such a despicable person and she's just done so many despicable things. So it's like, but I don't know. I will not be surprised if she comes back.
I absolutely agree with you there. And I also think the difficulty with Dorinda, I guess it's like a little bit of a test case, even though it wasn't intended in that way, to see what happens with this spinoff also, because Jill will be there as well. But the difficulty with Dorinda is, like, knowing what she has said in interviews since, she said sort of the same thing, had a similar strategy that we saw during her last reunion. I think Dorinda was surprised that she was put on pause, as the network said, and also unwilling to account for what they seemingly wanted her to do in order to come back, which was like dry out and or figure out what's going on there. Because it was very dark and very mean and often kicked off by a lot of alcohol, but she's still mean even when she's not drinking. But I don't think she, if you like watch the reunion, she's so defensive and has remained so since. And it's like, how do you bring her back if she hasn't learned from that? What position will she be in? Couldn't you argue that she would be like even angrier coming back with the knowledge in her back pocket that she had been temporarily suspended, essentially?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that that's all, those are all great points, but I also think that the spinoff was probably like them seeing how mm-hmm. she was to work with. Because mm-hmm. I wonder what, I feel like my guess is she was actually probably always a pleasure to work with. That's my guess. But I feel like it was probably to see like how she is to work with these women in this current cast of All Stars or whatever. And then to see what her Q rating would be post. Because I feel like she probably scored super low on like audience ratings after her last season. And they were like, and they were hoping that she would apologize at that reunion and own what she, because like, Tinsley came and Tinsley was like, Tinsley in name and presence was like a great housewife addition in New York, but to me, like, never did anything for the show other than like literally her presence as like a former like society girl.
Right.
But that last reunion that she had was like amazing. Like, I kind of don't want her to ever come back because she like came and she was like amazing and then she left. And she had such a great showing and like Dorinda couldn't even meet her in the middle. Like, she just couldn't see anything. And I think that they hoped that Dorinda would give herself her own redemption and she didn't. And I think that, yeah, she was probably like, they were probably like, you scored super low. Like, nobody, like, you were the fan favorite coming into the season and people don't like you. And so, yeah, you're getting put on pause. I wonder what the plan, like, I'm sure that they promised the women from this new All-Star season nothing. Like, I'm sure it was told, like, this is not an invitation back to Housewives, blah, 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 because they know those are all thirst buckets. But I think internally, though, I think there had to be some version of, like Andy's now doing a press and talking about Phaedra. He wants Phaedra to come back. So, like, to me, it was, like, a test to say, like, is Phaedra still, like, whatever. Like, has she, like, has she repented for what she did? You know, like, is she good on the show? Is Brandy, like, a liability or was she good? Like, they put a ton of liabilities and thirst buckets in a house together. So I wonder what, like, if we'll see any of these women creep into the franchises here on out, you know? Like, I feel like Phaedra potentially could, depending on what the season of Atlanta goes. And, like, seems like Jill and Dorinda potentially could in New York, whether it's this season or future.
You've worked in TV production, reality TV, for a long time, illustrious career. And I just kind of wonder, when it comes to, like, what we want to happen, what Andy seemingly wanted to happen at the reunion, what I'm sure production was hoping, pushing to happen with Dorinda, was a sign of repentance, as you said, regarding Phaedra. It was like a sign that she acknowledged that she had misbehaved, something was going on, so that they could move forward and leave this darkish chapter behind. My question to you is, understanding that that was the hope, what's the prep for Dorinda? Do you think anybody is sitting her? This is like maybe a dumb question, but I do not know this. Like, do you think someone sat down Dorinda, like her story producer, whoever it is, and was like, listen, you know, your last season was a shit show. Here's the kind of Dorinda that we would like to see, or, you know, something to work on, blah, blah, blah. Or do they just say 3, 2, 1, go? And find out what happens. How do you think that works?
I mean, itself, you know, I think every show is different, obviously. And also, like, I don't necessarily have, you know, I only have my experience to go on. But I think that they're probably are just checking in with everyone and saying, like, where are you in your life? Who are you friends with in New York society? Where are you with Jill? Where are you with Tinsley? Where are you with whomever else is maybe coming back or not coming back? Probably just throwing a lot out there. And then, like, how is your sobriety? Are you dating? How's Hannah? And I think they're probably just seeing, like, how well she seems. And like, do you want to be back? Are you interested in being on TV? Like, what do you have going on that you would show us? And I'm sure that she's very close with lots of people on production who, because I just feel like because you're talking to them constantly. And I'm sure that someone is saying to her, you know, like, it was a rough ride towards the end there. Like, they're like, the network's not going to go for that, you know, because I think that also, like, production companies are different from the network. So production company could say, like, love Brandy, which I feel like they must, because she came back on Beverly Hills so many times. They must love her. Like, she must be great to work with, and she does exactly what they want. I feel like Bravo, I feel like, was like, we don't like Brandy. Like, she's, like, cheapens the brand. She's, like, whatever. Like, stop bringing her around. And, you know, and it could be the other, or it could be the other way, where someone could say, like, we love, like, the network could say, like, we love Dorinda, and Shed could be like, okay, she's a lot to work with, you know? Like, and I don't have any, this is me just all speculating.
Right, of course.
I think that someone for sure has been in, I think that someone was probably in Dorinda's ear before that reunion, being like, you know, it's probably not a bad idea to hear Tinsley out. But, you know, like, that's, that this is why these women get cast, because they have strong opinions, because they don't want to just follow, you know, the leader. And I think the best housewives have a, are just authentic and are like, want to speak. And like, you can't make this stuff up. Like, I've, you know, you've meet too many, you meet reality people and you think like, oh, like, it's so confusing, because it's like, they're, you know, they're just exactly how they are on TV. So it's like, and it's like, your eyes cross sometimes, but then, you know, like, then you also see them, like, they get, sometimes they, some people, some of them get it, and you're like, watch them turn it up, and you're like, oh, okay, so you do get it. But then you try to, like, talk to them about real things outside of the cameras filming, and you're like, oh, do you get it? So I just think that Dorinda probably knew that she needed to apologize to make it better, but she couldn't, because she didn't believe it. So I don't know. I don't know. This is a long rant. I don't know. I hope that she's good. I would love for her to come back. I miss her. I feel like her presence is so missed. And also, she was just such a one of a kind New York, because she was like, I don't know. I don't even know if she's Italian, but she just has like,
she has to be. She has to be.
Like the lack
or
of
Irish,
sort of, the lack of like Jewish and Italian representation in like New York City. It's like why Jill and Dorinda are so great is because like they represent like a New York to me that I'm like, yeah, like I get it. It's like mama bear, matriarchs, but also like super passionate, like, you know, but also good time girls. Like I'm into both of them coming back. And I would love for Jill to come back with Dorinda, because we've never seen that pairing. And also like Dorinda would probably be like, stop fucking acting.
I mean, when it comes to like the Jewish Italian energy, as an Italian Jew, it's just like my absolute sweet spot. And it just reminds me, like, one of the many reasons that I fell in love with Housewives, when you think about, you know, what got you here, who drew you in, I do think my answer, quite honestly, as I think of the history of me watching this show, would be Jill Zarin. There was something comforting and enticing about watching a woman say repeatedly over and over again that she's like a big deal in society and here's how society works and I run in a fabulous circle of people and also I am extraordinarily Jewish. Like I just, her energy and like there's so much about her that I understood and found comfortable and also just enticing when it comes to the like society glitz of it all, even though it was like a little different, certainly than the Tinsley level of stuff. But I do miss her. I miss that energy. It is New York. Like, hello. I mean, I always think that like, you know, if you're Italian, that means you're a little bit Jewish. And if you're Jewish, that means you're a little bit. I think there's such a connection there in how we express ourselves. I miss it. I do
also
miss that
the
vibe.
Two of them back with like Luann being like the straight woman to them would be so fun. And like, yeah, I would be into it. I'm very here for it.
I wonder what Jill and Sonia, I wonder how they would get along. I feel like my gut says not well.
I think Jill would be like, stop the shit. You've been doing the same shit. Close your legs and stop drinking and being sloppy. And I think that's kind of what Sonia needs. I mean, she has that, I guess, but I think the thing with, again, the thing with this is why Heather Dubrow, this bringing Heather, and I know that some people are not fans. Brian Moylan always says he's not a fan of Housewives returning. I'm the opposite. Like, I love the world I love it feeling like a Marvel, it's my Marvel cinematic universe. It's like a huge world where characters come back. Like, I love a big party where suddenly you're like, I just heard that Deshaun Snow showed up at like an Atlanta party and I was like, amazing. I don't care if she doesn't even talk. I want to see Lisa Wu and Deshaun Snow at the party because it makes me believe the history of these women being friends. That way, in case one day they do come back, it doesn't make you feel like, oh, they haven't been around. It's like, oh, no, there's a flashback to them at that party. And so Heather Dubrow coming back on OC works because there's like burned in history. And that's why if you bring Jill back or Dorinda or both, they have burned in history, not with just Luann, but also with Ramona and Sonia. And then also like Kelly and Bethany and Cindy, like all of the women who've come and gone. So gone since then. So there's just like, it like just builds out the world. And that is really nice to me. That makes what makes these shows the best.
This will never happen. And I know it won't happen. And I have made peace with that, except I absolutely have not made peace with it. And I need it to happen. This is like the number one thing I need to happen in the world of Housewives. It's never going to happen. Let me just say that 8 more times. But I really need Bethany and Jill to be on the same season, even if Jill's like a friend of, but not this bullshit cameoing at a Christmas tree thing. And then we see her face and then nothing else, or like her drinking Pepsi, talking about, you know, I miss this stuff when like Lou and Tom or Happily Ever Aftering. Like, I want to see them back. I think Bethany at a certain point will need to come back for the purposes of nothing else is really working, as well as her being on Housewives when it comes to monetizing and keeping her other ventures highly successful. I would love to see it. I don't think it will, but I would fucking love to see it. My God, we deserve it. We've been through so much.
I think the stakes were really high when Bobby died. And I feel like if it didn't happen following that,
we're fucked. Yeah. It's, and probably after Dennis died, and then it was Bobby passed away and then Dennis passed away. And it was like, these two women will understand each other as essentially widows. Bethany wasn't married to Dennis, but I mean, they were close.
What that told me, and I don't know, like, I don't know that Jill is more, genuine, like in the scenario, but to me it reads as more genuine because I feel like she's like, I love this person, that we're my friend. I feel like to me it just shows me that their friendship for Bethany was like a show friendship, and like once it was broken on the show and like the show wasn't like part, like when Bethany didn't need Jill as part of the show, then it was like, okay, like it's fine, like I can go and pay my respects and I'll do it on camera, but like I don't need her to be, I'm not gonna like say I'm gonna film with her again and like give her a job and like be on, like I don't need to build a friendship again with this person on camera. And I think I don't know if I respect it. I think it's annoying, but I think that is what it is. Like I don't foresee it happening. And if it does, I just don't know that Housewives has that many more seasons before Jill's back on the show and Bethany comes back to it. But maybe, I mean, who knows? Weirder things have happened. I mean, Danielle Staub came back to the show, and we both, when we first started Andy's Girls, we said that would never happen. And now I'm like, once that happened, I was like, oh, for sure Jill will come back one day. And for sure Phaedra will come back one day. Because those were the two people that I was convinced would never come back as well. And now I'm like, everyone will come back. If Danielle came back, even if it was as a friend of for 2 seasons, like anybody can come back.
I do just have to say, just for the record, for the public record, that I do not think that it was a show friendship. I think that they became friends because of the show and then developed a very, very close friendship, almost, I would argue, maybe too close. And then when tension started to happen about who was getting more attention from the show, Jill attempted to use the show to harm her former friend. So like this show was a huge part of their friendship, but I think it was about more than that. And not to compare, because I don't know that it's worthy of comparison, but like a sort of similar trajectory with Bethany and Carol, where they became friends because of the show and then developed a really close, genuine, personal friendship. And then, you know, the show became sort of a weapon between them, you know, when they fell out.
Yeah. I guess the difference is it's not like a Stephanie and Brandy from Dallas.
True. Where
like you have these best friends who prior to the show and they film together. And then I would just think like if my former best friend, I don't know, I would think that if there was like a real friendship that I wanted to, but maybe they don't want to repair it. Like, you know, breakups are breakups too. I get it. I don't know. I'm thinking about my former best friend. And if we were going to film a reality show, would I want to go back and document it? And I don't know that I would want to. I might be like, I think the friendship is over.
I 100% would not appear on a reality TV show with a former friend. There would be no way, absolutely no way in hell would I do that. Are you kidding?
I only had like one friend breakup in my whole life, in a real friend breakup, and I just don't think that I would want to deal with that on camera. It was like it was a real breakup, you know?
I have had several, and I've always been the dumper. I don't know what that says. But like I mean, a very, very close friend.
Set of boundaries, I'm like, this yeah.
Well, because it was in every case I was trying to institute boundaries and the person was like, I do not like that you were doing this. And I was like, okay, well, I don't I'm growing as a person and I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you here. Listen, speaking of growth as a person and, you know, some left and right turns, some feeling, some energy. Gia, Judice had a big role on this mm-hmm. week's Jersey. I know that you have expressed you had a lot to say about Gia, some thoughts. And I just kind of wanted to check in with you. And, you know, Damian Bellino, how are we thinking? What are we feeling?
I don't even know that I have, like, so many things to say. I just had such a reaction to it. And I listened to what you were saying in the last episode of Andy's Girls. And I don't know that I agree that I thought that she showed a lot of, like, emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence.
Okay. I thought you were going to say emotional maturity.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. Same thing. But like to me, like her emotional intelligence, like.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm giving eyes. I don't look at it as a indicator of emotional intelligence, but that just happens to be my opinion. I think of it more through emotional maturity. But I'm here for you. I'm here for it. This is your feeling, and you have the right to it. You have the right to it.
I don't think that she was like. I just think she seemed very young, and I recognize that she is 21 or 20, 21. I don't know how old she was when it was filming. But, or maybe she's 21 there then some, and 22 some, now. Anyway, yeah, she's
same
young.
Same difference.
She's young, yeah. And that is still young. I will say the thing that I feel like it's hard because she's defending the position of her father and also her siblings. But it also is like wrapped up in this like idea of respect. Like she feels like Joe is disrespecting her father. And to me, that's where like I felt like it was really picking because I felt like she is like having this reality TV moment with her uncle who she's choosing to call Joe, which to me is already a sign of disrespect. Like on camera, she's like, Joe, I haven't seen you for 6 months. And she's like needling him about respect, but then like sort of she's intentionally disrespecting him by calling him Joe. And she was on Watch What Happens Live, I think the week prior to this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy played this game with her and it was like, can you defend your mom in this situation? And she basically defended Teresa in every situation but two. One was when Teresa helped like encourage Danielle to pull
Margaret's hair.
And I'm trying to think what the other time was. I think the Evan rumor. But okay. every other moment she could defend her mother's behavior, including pushing Andy at the reunion, flipping the table on Danielle, calling, you know, Kim D a piece of shit, whore, whatever she called her, the posh. And so when I watched that and then I saw the episode, I was like, I think, and this is my like expectation, and it's like Gia is not Brianna, but like what I wished is that Gia could have had a sense of humor and been like, no, I can't defend it, but I love you, mom. No, I can't defend it, but I love you, mom. And I watched this woman, young woman, be like, yeah, I would have pushed you too, Andy. That's how I get when I'm really mad. Yeah, I would have flipped the table. She was really like asking for it. Like, yeah. And so then watching her act with Joe, I was like, this is a woman who's, you know, smart, going to school to be, I think, a lawyer and whatever. She's in college or maybe she's graduated at this point. But she was raised by Teresa and Joe and she's reactionary and she has this idea of like family loyalty. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know. It just I don't know that I have like articulate things to say other than like the idea of her disrespecting her uncle for disrespecting her father, like when her mom and her uncle are aligned, like Teresa knows that Joe's defending her and appreciates that, but then is like watching her daughter disrespect her brother on television. It all just feels like a snake eating its tail. It's like, well, you all signed up for the show. So to me, it felt gross. And the only reason she came back in to talk to him was because a producer told her to. And I was like, actually really into Joe and Melissa in the episode, because I felt like Joe was really mad, but I felt like it was like watching, to me, it was like watching like my, like a real like old Italian man be really mad, but being like in an argument with like a young woman or a girl in the family, and being like, he was like red and like holding himself in because he couldn't be explosive Joe, because it's his niece and he's, you know, it's his family. And then Melissa coming and being like, Joe, she doesn't mean it. She's whatever. Like the way that Melissa de-escalated the situation to me was like, was seeing Melissa in a different way than we often don't get to see her, which is like getting to see her in a maternal way. I think that Teresa so often is seen as the mama bear of Jersey. And I think seeing Melissa get to, I just feel like there's so much behind that family that we don't know. And I think that Teresa and Joe's relationship seems very close, but like the dynamics are weird. Like the fact that they haven't seen each other for 6 months, like I wonder, do they only see each other when filming? Like, are they show friends? You know, like, are Melissa and Teresa just aligned for the show? Teresa and Joe are like, whatever, I love you, this is our job, this is how we make money now, but whatever, we don't have to see each other. Like, it all just felt really disconnected from real family, and it felt sad to watch, and I felt disappointed in Gia, because I think I had hoped that we, like, I know that, again, I know that Brianna is, like, the gold standard, but I just, like, wanted more of a level head, and that's not for me, like, that's, she's entitled to her emotions. It just was, like, it was a disappointment to me, and it also felt antithetical to be, like, don't disrespect family while I disrespect you. And it was like, okay, he's your elder, he's your uncle, you're calling him by his first name. Again, all arbitrary, stupid rules, but if you're trying to say, like, he shouldn't speak on your father, it's like, okay, you're also two. He's your dad, I get it. Like, I get why you would have feelings, but also, your mom agrees with him. I don't know. It just feels, also, she's, I don't know. Talk.
Didn't she call him Zio Joe, though? She was calling him Uncle Joe? Or was she just, I thought she said that at a couple points. Was she just straight up?
Did she say
up?
Zio?
Yeah.
I thought she only said Joe. I did not rewatch it, though, so it's possible.
I mean, the points made about, you know, Tree getting a lot of credit, deservedly so in many ways, but for being the mama bear and watching.
Totally.
Melissa really actually prove that point at this specific event, like being like the one to de-escalate, the one to actually involve herself, but in a way that attempted to level the playing field and truly like get the tempers, the flare down, is a really valuable and astute point. You know, the thing with Gia is I think that when it comes to what she said so openly, which we haven't actually heard from the kids, understandably so, because of their ages and the sensitivity of the subject matter, but the idea that she was like, he gets that he fucked up, he gets that he's like the bad guy in this, he understands that he harmed his wife and his family, but you need to stop talking about this because we're not being allowed to move on, like my siblings are upset at you. And it's like a two-parter for me, because one is I think she's able to express frustration and anger at Joe because he is seen as safe. Like they may or may not be able to have open and honest conversations with their father in that way. They may not want to tarnish the limited amount of time they have to see him IRL, even though it would, I would think, be such a benefit. But I understand why not. There's that to me. And then there's also just the idea that like, when it comes to maternal roles, Gia's played that part with her family and with her siblings. I do think that there is anger that she feels about this situation, coupled with the safety I think that she feels in genuinely being angry with Joe. I think she knows that he's not going to cross the kinds of lines that she's seen be crossed before, I think. And I think her siblings are pissed because, and she's pissed about the situation, the place that they were put in, the fact that they can't move on from it. And if Joe is the one being asked the question in the public eye, a lot of that rage that could be directed another way, not just at Joe, but at Tree too, they're directing at their uncle. There's like something else going on here. And I don't think it's a, I think that this is a like legit, they see each other a lot. At least they did when, you know, the tree and Joe's parents were still alive. Like, I think that that's why when she kept saying 6 months, that meant so much, because it's so antithetical to how they like to see each other outside of the time in which there was an enormous longstanding divide, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, that divide now has been going on for years, you know, like the divide since the parents, you know, since mm-hmm. the mother passed. And I think that, like, yeah, I don't disagree that she feels like she can be safe. It's a safe place to argue with her uncle. But Joe, her father, Joe Giudice, you know, was like doing like swipe up stories about Joe and Melissa like a year ago.
A great point.
And so I think the idea that we're just going to keep going back and forth and Joe and Melissa need to keep eating shit out of respect for their nieces is kind of ridiculous. And I think that, you know, that is like what I find frustrating, is that like, I wish they all would be Gabriella and just be like, I'm good. I don't need to be on the show. Because I feel like watching Gia be so angry, like I think Teresa can be very angry, rather than just being like, this is going to be like, my dad's doing shit too. And I can be mad at him, but like we don't get to see her anger at her dad because he's not on the show with them, you know, right. Or not anymore. I don't know. It felt like, well, you just said it in such an articulate way that I like danced around forever, but like the misplaced anger directed at Joe is like was really hard to watch, because mm-hmm. it just felt like she's yelling about being disrespected. And I feel like we're going to watch more of it with Melania, who's like, you know.
Ooh, man, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, younger tough. And also was like really in cahoots, like really close with Joe, mm-hmm. her father. And I just like, I don't know. I mean, I understand why it's like the story, because it's like this is sort of the backbone of what Jersey is built on, is like this family and family in general. But it also like it's not fun stuff. So it's like, well, getting back to what we were talking about, OC in Miami, it's like this is like heavy and it feels real. And it's also like I don't particularly like feeling like I'm watching kids. And I know G is an adult, but she's still a young adult, and she's also someone who like has grown up on television. So I'm like really rooting for her to like be better than any problematic scenarios that she's been like given, you know. I want mm-hmm. her to like rise above it. And seeing like her anger, I was just like, oh, like why do you want to do this on camera? Mm-hmm. Why? Like what? I think it's probably to prove something to her father. It's to prove to him that she's loyal and defend him, you know, in defending him. And that is, I understand. I don't think it's noble, and I don't think it's mature, and I don't, you know, she's entitled to do whatever she wants, but it all just felt gross, especially because it'd be one thing if Teresa was like really like, Joe, stop bringing up Joe, you know, like to her brother, like stop doing this. Like, it's upsetting me. It's upsetting the girls. Like, just, we gotta like put it to bed. But Teresa's like, I know Joe's defending me and I get it. He did take me away from my parents. But then the daughters want to argue, and I'm like, well, you guys don't have the whatever you hold in Jersey, nothing. And I don't want to watch kids argue with their uncle. It feels sad and dark. So it really shook me though, because I feel like I grew up in a very traditional Italian Catholic household and with a family. And like, I don't know. I don't believe, like, I don't believe we should trust and respect people because they are elders or because they're our family by any means. I don't believe in any of that shit. It's all arbitrary. But I also wouldn't ever be on camera, like, fucking cussing my uncle out and calling him by his first name. You know what I mean? I guess so. Maybe a part of me does believe in it. You know what I mean? Like, it just was so weird. It just felt so weird. And I was like, and then Teresa wasn't doing anything. And I guess she feels like I'm sure she talked to Gia about it, and Gia said she wanted to do it, and Teresa was like, okay, you know, do it. But it was just all weird. And so, I don't know, but it made me have more respect, honestly, for Melissa and Joe, just like by the way he was able to sort of be like, Gia, I'm allowed to have feelings too. He took my parent, like my mom died, you mm-hmm. know, and like my sister didn't get to say goodbye and all of that, you know, like I felt like he was able to present a different version of himself. And I thought Melissa for sure did. So in that way, I guess I'm appreciative, but it all just felt sad and dark. And like, I'm so sick of fucking Joe Giudice's ghost haunting this, but it will be forever. I mean, it's their dad, it's their life.
So many good points. When it comes to Tree not saying anything, I mean, do you think that's something that she has capacity to do in that moment? She was so quiet. She was like, there's some, you know, there's like actively listening, and then there's like Teresa in the background.
She was disassociating on purpose. Like she, because she didn't want to involve herself because she knew that choosing not to defend Gia would be seen as a betrayal to her daughter and I guess daughters. But she, I think that that speaks volumes, because to me that tells me that she agrees with Joe. And that's why I felt particularly frustrating, because I felt like if Teresa was standing up screaming at Joe to stop, then we would have I would be heartbroken, and I would say, oh my God, this young girl is defending her mom, and to the point where like now she's like adopted her mom's persona, and Joe just needs to like stop, whatever. He can fucking hate that guy, he should, but we don't need to talk about it on the show anymore. But the fact that Teresa sat there and bit her tongue and acted like it wasn't happening, she doesn't have the emotional intelligence to, I don't think, engage in it in a thoughtful way, because I think that she would just sputter into emotion. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and I don't think she trusts herself that it wouldn't be to fuck off to Joe, her ex-husband, you know? Like, I don't think she feels that loyalty to him, obviously, because she's no longer with him. But I think she wants to respect her kid's wishes. I just wish that she was like, don't do this. Like, you shouldn't. You know, like, let's have a private moment with the family. But I don't know. They've been living their life on camera for so long. I know that that's like, again, that is antithetical to who they are, because they've been living their life. Like, this is their, how they make their money.
I wonder if the kids are talking to Joe and Melissa again in real time. I think next episode is going to be really tough. I think it's going to be real tough to see Joe and the other kids. Like, I wonder where things stand now, if they were able to reach, because at the end it was like they hugged and made up in the sense that they were like, let's move on from this. But of course they both know that there's work to do ahead of them. So,
and we saw a coming attraction with Melania. Am I crazy?
Right. No, of course we did. That's why I'm asking. Like, it's going to be a rough go, I would think, the next episode. I think it's going to be tougher, because Melania is, to me, much more headstrong in support of her father. I can't see Melania saying out loud that her father fucked up. I could be 100% wrong. I just don't see it.
You know who I'll believe if they speak?
Hmm?
Gabriella. If Gabriella speaks, I'll listen. She did say something in the most recent episode when they were like talking prior. She said something like, I don't remember, like, our dad's not here to be able to, I don't know. She did say like one thing, and I was like, I love my girl. She always has perspective.
She has been your girl for years. You have stanned her for so long.
I know. I can't handle that she's like a senior in high school and like a babe. But I was like in Durham, and she was like 11 and like wanted to go to school. And all the other girls were like, oh, Teresa, let's stay home. And she was like, Teresa was like, you want to go to school? And Gabriella was like, yeah.
Gabriella has never been interested in the show. And it's the coolest thing about her. It's so, she's like a genuine cool kid. Like, she really is. And she understands how much of this is absolute bullshit. And she's been put in a horrifying predicament and situation. And just, she seems to have an incredibly level head.
Also, I just love like Ozzy Osbourne and Sharon Osbourne's oldest daughter, who like wasn't
Amy.
On. I like, I, anytime a person who's like a part of, it's also like Meredith and Seth have an adult daughter who's
adult son
who like isn't on the show. And like, right. Anytime someone chooses not to be, I think I like find it to be very attractive, and am envious of it, because there's like no version of the world like where my parents would get a reality show and like I would be like, oh, I want to be on it. Like, I would never be like, this will be bad for the family, I shouldn't be on it, I don't want to fight with you guys on camera. I'd be like, amazing. Amazing. Thank you. What number am I on the call sheet? And it's like when I see people who choose to like not be in the limelight to like protect their like sanity and you know, mental health and private life, I'm like, wow, like good on you. You are a person who knows yourself.
And to do that at such a young age, like she instinctively knows this is not for me. And God bless her for it. God bless her for it. Our little Italian angel over there in Franklin Lakes. Listen, you know who is my Italian angel over here in New York City? Sir Damian Bellino for today's episode. I wanted to talk to you about Jennifer Aiden. I need to hear your thoughts. I literally must hear them.
I know. I'm really struggling. I feel kind of two ways about it.
Tell me. Oh, let's do a little mini version that we'll expand on the page.
Well, like, I do feel like I'm like sort of, synthesizing my thoughts through like Watch What Happens Live polls. But people, Andy was asking, you know, were people on Margaret's side or Jen's side? And it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm on Jen's side because I feel bad that it happened on camera. And then people, I guess, were mostly on, like, I don't remember, Margaret said or something. But basically, it's like, if it, you know, if you can dish it, then you need to be able to take it. And obviously, Jen had lots to say about Margaret's, you know, how Margaret met her husband and her previous marriage and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So, like, of course, I agree with that. Like, you sign up for the show, you know where the bodies are buried. You know what's, you know that it, there's potential for it all to come out, and it probably will, especially the longer you're on. And also, like, if you poke people, they're eventually going to get you. On the flip side, though, I really struggled with Margaret and the way that she was like, kids are resilient, when she was talking about this, because she was basically saying, like, this is a fact, you know, it's not like a rumor, like the Evan stuff. This is a fact. And like, and Jen was like, okay, but like my kids are going to have, I have to explain this to my kids now. And she was like, well, kids are resilient. And that was like, well, I don't know that, like, sure, humans are resilient, but like, it's not really a reason to be doing, like, I felt like her logic there felt faulty, and I felt like she was acting like that was a great defense, like, okay, like, you know, my kids got through what I got through, and you know, you didn't, I guess, care about my kids last year when, or was it two seasons ago when all of that stuff was coming out about the book. I don't know. I mean, I think that it feels sad. I feel like they worked through it. I don't know, is Jersey gonna be a sad season?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that there's just some weirdness here that, like, Jennifer wanted to put up a very, you know, our lives are perfect, yada, yada front. And now we're understanding that there's a lot that's going on that seems to involve not talking about things that specifically hurt her. The fact that she's like, and we moved on and we never talked about it ever again. I thought to myself, ooh, that is not something to be proud of. Like, not to say that she was being proud, and obviously there was a concerted effort to move on from this, and their version of that was never to discuss it. But I just think, like, the wound will fester. When you are betrayed in that way, when you're 9 months pregnant, or however old, not however old, however long she was into her pregnancy when the actual cheating happened, let alone when she found out, there's like deciding to keep things moving for complicated reasons. And then there's the like not having this conversation and yet also having a lot of fucking feelings about what a piece of shit cheaters are. Like, I thought that Margaret's response of their resilient was pretty cold. But I also understood it in the sense that she refused to take responsibility for the pain that talking about this thing, for the pain that that might cause Jennifer's kids, because Jennifer didn't care about Jackie's kids and allegedly continued to try to get information, understanding how upset that made Jackie and Evan last season. Like, Jennifer has done things that could backfire in her children, as anyone does who is a housewife with kids. Like, if you are a child, like, under, I would say, college age, and you have a parent on Housewives, there is the likelihood that they will have done something that is going to make your life a little bit complicated. And so it's like, not to diminish what either of them have done, but like, that's just the name of the game, is that like childhood can be super awkward. And you know, other kids can make the stakes really big and really mean, and that's going to, that like could genuinely happen regardless. But I understood why Margaret was like, I'm not going to take ownership of this because you haven't taken ownership of so much else that I'm not going to sort of fall for this, is what I felt. I was cold. It was cold and absolutely insensitive, but it's also like, Jennifer, my God, like, how do we figure out how you can get through this? Because it is so wildly hypocritical. It just is. There's reasons. Like, I get why she would feel a certain way about wanting to prove that someone else was stepping out because she wants to take control of a situation involving infidelity, especially if she didn't feel like she had any. And I get her wanting to be very open and very vocal and incredibly critical of Margaret and Margaret's mother, which is in some ways as fucked up as a child, even though you're a grown-ass adult, mm-hmm. you can handle yourself, but it's still really awful. I get the reasons behind it, but it is also just incredibly hypocritical. Like, you can't get past that. I just can't get past it.
Okay, that's fair enough. Can we just talk about for a second how it was iconic, though, when, I don't know what Margaret said, like, his secretary and Jen was like, okay, it was a fucking pharmaceutical rep. Get your fucking information right, you idiot. And I was into that. I thought it was like, I was like, oh, I would wear that on a t-shirt. It was hilarious. It was like, I don't know that it was meant to be funny, but it got me.
I loved it. I thought it was one of the best line readings of the season because Margaret said office manager and she was like pharmaceutical rep. And then word on the street is that there may have also been an office manager. So I don't know. I was like, it doesn't take away from the power of that line, but like, everyone check the LinkedIns for office managers for a plastic surgeon who doesn't do faces but does everything else.
Oh my gosh. Also that.
So bad.
I don't know how your husband is a plastic surgeon and that happens. Because he said you were a high maintenance patient.
I did a Patreon Zoom Kiki this past weekend, and topic of conversation, we went 40 minutes over the event time because I literally couldn't stop talking. We were all talking about all things pertaining plastic surgery, and shout out to the AG in attendance who is also a physician who was like guiding us through the process and like what it means to get surgery in Turkey. And did you know that going to Turkey to get plastic surgery, it can be as expensive as in the United States? I did not know that.
I mean, I guess the Instagram coupon helped.
I mean, and look how that panned out. Jennifer tagging the surgeon and being like, he's bad. What? I did not have that on my bingo card for 2022.
Oh, I didn't know that happened. Wow.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, it does Bill, like, literally not two faces? Because can you imagine booking a rhinoplasty with this guy after his wife is like, I don't trust him to do it? Like, how's that going to work for business?
That's tea, actually. Good point. Like, why didn't he think about the fact that she would be looking so, I mean, maybe he thought it wouldn't be such
a bad job.
Right, like maybe he thought that it wouldn't be something that she would have to be, it would be a plot point that people would be like, is your nose new? Because, like, maybe he thought it would be more nuanced, but it's a significant different face, which makes me sad. I mean, as long as she's happy, but it always is like
she's
jarring.
Not happy. She says she regrets it. But she, like, she's gonna have to get it fixed.
When Heidi Montag got all of her work done, I was obsessed with it because I was just like, there's something when you see someone that you used to recognize as someone like looking very different. It's like takes you like, what are they? Is it the same person? And so I was like, Jen looks really different.
I mean, the thing is, it's like you can't end it with like the, at least she's, you know, because she does not like her. And the worst part is she's had to like respond in comments for Bravo fan pages being like, just for the record, I like don't like the way I look right now, which is just really depressing that so many people are talking about it that she feels like she has to respond. And I like get it. I like get her doing that. I just feel really bad because it's your, you know, I'm going through this road of getting a fucking needing to get a septal rhinoplasty because of a fall last year, and it is my, I hate to say it, but it, her nose job is my worst case scenario, which is taking out all the character.
Leah had a nose job that's like hardly noticeable, like it's so gradual, you know.
Yeah,
lots of people have had good ones.
Yeah.
Do you think that Lisa in Miami, do you think whatever his name is, did all of her work?
Lenny? I don't know. I think he's probably told her he's unavailable because he hates her so much. Like, my favorite thing about Miami is watching Lenny hate his wife. Is that, I don't know. I know that's terrible, but it's like, it's so obvious that he hates her. And she's like, I'm so into it. I'm baffled by them,
their relationship. I also thought she was like 49, and I don't want to age shame her. I just was like, she's literally like 33, and I was like, wait.
So much work. She's gotten, I don't know anything about plastic surgery, and I'm very pro, do whatever you want all the time. But fillers, because we've seen so many poor examples of fillers on Housewives, I don't think they're, I don't know anything about them. I don't understand the difference. 2022 is the year of not learning. I don't want it explained to me. I would rather stay dumb. But it just doesn't seem like a great idea. Everybody comes out of it looking worse than they did before.
Once I figured out that, so I was watching Miami like 2 weeks ago, and I just like went down this rabbit hole of ages, and I figured out that Larsa has like 10 plus years on Lisa. And I was like, wait.
Yeah.
And then I just assumed that they were, I figured if anything, Larsa was younger. And now I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Larsa's like almost 50 and looks better. I mean, I don't know if it's better. It's just Lisa looks like no age. It's like Morgan Fairchild, when we were young, Morgan Fairchild was Chandler's mom on Friends. And I remember thinking like she was like, I thought she was like a hot old lady who had a lot of plastic surgery. But now she's like my real mom's age. And I'm like, oh, so you weren't really old then. You were like regular middle age, but like looked like no age. And I feel like that, like Lisa just looks like she could be 30 or she could be 50. But like, who's counting? Me. I am. I'm looking.
Well, listen, we're going to have to transition this to the Patreon, because I actually can think of a couple comparisons within Just Like That when it comes to the conversation around looking different on television and otherwise through the lens of women-based storytelling. So I'm excited for that, guys. You can listen to that episode, which will be up this week on the Andy Scrolls Patreon, the number one way to support the podcast. $2 a month gets you My Love and Sass. $5 a month gets you 2 bonus episodes. $10. $4 plus $6 gets you 4 bonus episodes, invites to special events like the Zoom Kiki that we just had for Galentine's Day. And then there's a premium tier to record an app or just chat with me over Zoom, your choice, for, you know, an hour, called the People's Couch. And you can go to patreon.com/AndysGirls for more on that. Damian Bellino, tell the people where to follow you online, how to listen to You Might Know Her From, a recent guest who people can listen to before they listen to our Patreon episode as a study guide, a master's class in podcastery with a cast member from And Just Like That. Tell us everything.
You can find me on all the things, Instagram, Twitter, and such, at Damian Bellino. It's Damian with an A. And you can listen to my podcast, You Might Know Her From, wherever you're listening to this podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the things. And our most recent episode was with Karen Pittman, who you might know from And Just Like That, playing Professor Naya, who has some really interesting scenes with Miranda. So check that out. And then we're going to do a Patreon episode and talk about the And Just Like That finale, or the whole season. I don't know. I have so many things to talk about.
I need to rewatch the finale before we record.
Oh, good point. I'm going to do the same.
A verbal friendship contract, a la Cynthia and Nini Linithia. Guys, follow me on social at Dame Galley on Instagram. Damian Bellino, my God, what a wild and delightful and thoughtful episode this was.
Thanks for letting me work through all of my Italian-American trauma and all of my emotions.
Thanks for letting me be Jewish again every day of my life. Shout out Jill Zarin. Jill, I see you. Shalom. It means hello, welcome back to New York. Goodbye until tomorrow when you continue filming New York. And peace to everybody listening, guys. That's your word of the day. On that note, you know, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.